Hello, everybody. I'm Hank Wilson, and welcome to another history episode here. And today we're asking a question. Was Mirabeau Bonaparte Lamar a great Texas leader or a terrible human being? And are the two ideas necessarily incompatible? Can a person be a terrible human being and still be considered a great leader? Well, first of all, who was Mirabeau Bonaparte Lamar? He was the second president of the Republic of Texas, served from 1838 till 1841. His tenure stands out, at least to me, for two totally contradictory issues. On one hand, he absolutely despised the indigenous peoples of Texas, and on the other, he was a major supporter of funding public education. Well, public education for white children, not all children, but I digress. Lamar was a product of his time. He was born near Louisville, Georgia, on August 16, 1798. His father owned a plantation near Milledgeville, Georgia, and he was educated at various schools at Milledgeville and Eatonton. Now, according to many, he was an expert horseman, a voracious reader, and an accomplished fencer. At age 21, he moved to Cahuaba, Alabama, where he owned part of a general store. Now, in 1821, he worked with the Cahuaba Press. Now, this lasted until 1823, when George M. Troop was elected governor of Georgia, and Lamar returned to his home state to become Troop's secretary and a member of his household. Lamar married Tabitha Jordan of Twiggs County, Georgia, on January 1, 1826, and had to resign his position because, unfortunately, his wife became ill with tuberculosis. Now, in 1828, he moved his wife and his daughter, Rebecca Ann, to the new town of Columbus, Georgia, and there he established the Columbus Inquirer. Now, not so much as an independent publication, but more so as a way of supporting troop politics. Kind of reminds me of the media today, more PR firms than journalists. Anyway, in 1829, Lamar was elected to the Georgia State Senate, and sadly, though, his wife passed away in 1830. While Lamar was running for re-election, he withdrew from the race and spent some time writing poetry, including An Evening on the Banks of the Chattahoochee and Thou Idol of My Soul. He ran unsuccessfully for Congress in 1832, helped organize a new party, and was again defeated for Congress in 1834 on a nullification platform. The nullification platform was based on the belief that individual states had the right to declare federal laws unconstitutional and null and void. This would, of course, be seen later when southern states would espouse the states' rights argument. In 1835, Lamar sold his interest in the Inquirer and, along with James W. Fannin, Jr., traveled to Texas, ostensibly to collect historical data. Upon reaching Texas, he almost immediately began arguing for Texas independence. However, he didn't initially stay in Texas but returned to Georgia to settle his affairs. Now, after the Alamo fell and the Goliad Massacre, Lamar returned to Velasco. He enlisted in the Revolutionary Army at Crosses Point. Now, Lamar made his name and gained notoriety when, just prior to the Battle of San Jacinto, his quick action saved the lives of Thomas Jefferson Rusk and Walter Pay Lane, who had been surrounded by the enemy. His daring actions even gave him a salute from the Mexican lines. Lamar was verbally commissioned by a colonel and assigned to command the cavalry. Now, during the battle, he performed with what some call gallantry, and after the battle, he was appointed Secretary of War in David G. Burnett's cabinet. Now, Lamar demanded that Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna be executed as a murderer. He wasn't. We know he wasn't. But this attitude was a definite indication of how he believed enemies should be treated. A month later, Lamar was made a major general and given the role as commander-in-chief of the Texas Army. But the unruly Texas troops refused to accept him, and he ended up retiring to civilian life. Now, Lamar was, if anything else, a man who sought power and prestige. And so in the first national election of the Republic, held in September of 1836, he ran for and was elected vice president. Even though he was the vice president of the Republic, he spent most of the year 1837 in Georgia, where he was welcomed as a hero. He did use his notoriety to publicize the new Republic. Now, upon returning to Texas in December of 1837, he organized the Philosophical Society of Texas, which he used to assist him in his campaign for the presidency of the Republic. Now, the sitting president, Sam Houston, was unable to run for another term, and Lamar's opponents, Peter W. Grayson and James Collingsworth, both coincidentally committed suicide before Election Day. Now, needless to say, this ensured Lamar's election by an almost unanimous vote. During his inauguration, he declared the purposes of his administration was to promote the wealth, talent, and enterprises of the country. He also declared that he wanted to help lay the foundations of higher institutions to ensure they maintained the correct moral and mental culture. However, when he began his term, Texas was teetering on the verge of disaster. Only the United States recognized her independence. The Republic had no commercial treaties, and Mexico was threatening to invade and reconquer. Additionally, the indigenous tribes were menacing, and the treasury was empty, and currency basically had no value. Much like some modern politicians, Lamar tried to divert the thoughts of his constituents from the reality of their current existence by promising them that the Republic was on the verge of becoming a great empire. He did not want for Texas to become a part of the United States, but instead believed that Texas should expand to the Pacific Ocean. Now, instead of reinforcement of the policy that Sam Houston had, the conciliatory Indian policy towards the native peoples, Lamar chose to use sternness and force. In 1839, he ordered the Cherokees to be driven out of the state. And in 1840, he spent $2.5 million in a campaign to squash the Comanches in the western part of the Republic. He did initially seek peace with Mexico. He actually made an effort to directly negotiate with Mexico, but Mexico and the Mexican government had no desire to recognize Texas. So Lamar made a semi-official alliance with the rebel government in Yucatan, which it turned out to be and was essentially meaningless. He did propose a national bank, but instead of establishing the bank, the Congress authorized additional issues of paper money in the form of what were called redbacks, which greatly deprecated or depreciated by the end of his administration. There is one thing that Texas can thank him for, or depending on your point of view, dislike him for, and that is the location of the city of Austin. It was at his suggestion that the new capital city was built on the Indian frontier beside the Colorado River, which is where it is to this day. Now, as part of his grandiose plans for the expansion of Texas, he conceived of the Texan Santa Fe expedition, which got crushed, and I've talked about in other episodes, and I'll explore that again later. He ordered it without receiving approval of the Congress, and of course, it was botched. Now, Lamar's proposal was that Congress establish a system of education endowed by public lands, resulted in promising the Act of January 26, 1839, which did set aside land for public schools and two universities. Although it was decades before the school system was established, Lamar's advocacy of the program earned him the nickname Father of Texas Education. That was and is the high point of his reputation. Now, as someone who was from the Old South, he was in favor of slavery and came to believe that Texas had to become a state in order to protect slave owners and slavery. He died of a heart attack at his Richmond plantation on December 19, 1859, and he is buried in the Masonic Cemetery at Richmond. And that's going to do it for this episode. You can decide for yourself. Was Lamar a real, true Texas hero, or was he really a terrible human being? I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, folks. Thanks for listening.